This is an example of speech.
All our history of royalty. Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge. Thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blowhard evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation, turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. To listen to the archives, go to stoneduckmedia.com or tellmewhattothink.com. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Albro. You can contact me on Twitter at bloatednemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at green_weird, which is W-Y-R-D. This episode, we have a tell you what to think about Trump as commander-in-chief. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think.
Fighting over against to sell cocaine is just incontrovertibly insane. Revocation of the old boys network. Decision signed with a shake and a smirk. Centralized states get turned a blind eye. Those who benefit never ask why. Just sit back with a choice of cocoa beans. And don't wonder what profit really means. Follow dictates from the ivory tower. Waste your life in a struggle for power.
Yeah. So, welcome to Tell Me What to Think. You got some of the business in the introduction, so let's get right into the topic of the day. Our president announced, supposedly all the reporting is surprisingly announced, shocking legislators and
even his advisors.
Yeah. Which is like, okay, so wait, what's happening? Which we'll get into. That U.S. forces should leave Syria. There's been a lot of reporting about, you know, what Putin thinks about this. It gets getting people to question his allegiances. It gets me to question, like, well, okay, I don't like war and I want America to not be in war zones, but
there's a lot to think about here and to unpack about it.
Yeah, it should also, I mean, like my first order is I'm against war. My second order is, well, if you're going to do war, though, you got to be responsible about it.
Well, and part of that responsibility is knowing who you're fighting and why.
Which,
ISIS,
probably doesn't
99% a pacifist and against war, but ISIS is one of those groups that an argument could be made.
Yeah, for sure. And so now I recall seeing a couple weeks ago that the last like land that ISIS quote unquote held was taken. Was that accurate?
I saw that report too and haven't seen any corroborating report. Like, the figures that are being bandied about, like, there are 2,000 ISIS figures and like 30,000 ISIS fighters between Iraq and Syria are coming from very complicated sources that might not be timely.
Yeah.
People using numbers from the past to justify their contemporaneous arguments.
Yeah, it seems like there's like, because of the sort of exotic nature that these West, you know, of the conflict in the eyes of the Western nations, that it's like you can like use different terms to make certain groups seem bigger or smaller. Like, I feel like when it first started, there was a lot of talk of like everyone there is a terrorist. And we're like, okay, so how do we define terrorist? And anyway, but that was years ago. But I mean, the fact that you don't really have a good grasp about what kind of forces they're up against make me wonder if the president does either.
Probably not, I would bet. Well, obviously ISIS still exists in some way or form, even if it's just reverted to an insurgency, but you can't play whack-a-mole with an insurgency and expect results.
So before we take this all at face value, I'm going to ask you to wildly speculate. Is this going to happen?
That's an interesting question.
Because often when the president flies off independently, like particularly Defense Secretary Mattis, seems to be able to spin it a different way.
Sure.
And it doesn't happen, or it happens slower, or it happens in a more responsible manner. And it feels like this would be a situation, especially because it is Secretary Mattis who would be kind of running this, amongst others, that might happen again here. So it might be like bullshit. Or like a smokescreen. I don't know. I just
okay. A slight preface: how weird it is that we're questioning whether or not a president's mm-hmm. orders to the military will or won't be followed.
No, I know. Yeah, that's that's the undercurrent too of what I'm saying. I'm like, but yeah. That's kind of a pattern, mm-hmm.
right? And this is a lawful order about a military deployment, so the president should just be able to literally give even a oral yeah. order and expect a 30-day withdrawal, but
yeah,
and this is complicated because of our complicated involvement. We're sponsoring various proxy forces. We have the CIA and our allies, not to mention the British and the French, who are still there on the ground, continuing to conduct coalition operations. So if the U.S. military component pulls out of that, will it collapse the coalition?
Mm-hmm.
Will those forces just be supplemented by private contractors? Just send in...
Yeah.
Send in the mercenaries?
Yeah, is Eric Prince going in instead?
Yeah, there's too many questions around this to be able to, answer concretely what the hell is going on in the White House, or I hate to speculate what the hell goes on inside his head.
Yeah.
But... yeah, so wild projections, this probably won't happen, I'm going to bet. It seems like it was a very random and sudden order, almost done over tweet proclamation, so I really expect the rigid military-industrial complex to just be like, no, this isn't happening. 30 days is unrealistic.
This points to one of those bigger problems, then, with Trump, in that... even something that notionally should be one of the most concrete, statutory, by the book powers of a president,
right,
are now there's people, and in a justifiable sense, sometimes we can debate about this, but that is try to subvert his will, and yeah, is that legal? Is that constitutional? Every situation has different context, but it's kind of weird where it's like when you elect an authoritarian who wants to take more power, but then the establishment starts being like, nah, no, then it almost leads to the next president having even less power, which, by the way, may not be the worst thing, but this isn't the way that should be done.
Sure, and this isn't even him giving up powers. This is the forces that... in forces that are deployed in the interests that are involved saying that we don't want to give this up. They're not... Yeah, they want to maintain what we have and, continue this egregious illegal executive power grab, and he's trying to curtail it, and I oddly agree with him in that respect. We probably shouldn't be in Syria, as it's blatantly illegal and nobody's ever discussed it so much as voted on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And, yeah... but the part that I keep getting back to is that, okay, so if the U.S. and, say, even the British and French, all the Western military formations in Syria withdraw, mm-hmm. all that is going to do is put a huge target on the back of anybody who's supporting us, the Peshmerga, the factions of the Free Syrian Army, anyone.
Yeah.
They're just going to be in the crosshairs of the Syrian coalition, and the Russians apparently just bomb without really discriminating between military and civilian targets.
So that seems to be the undercurrent of the criticism that I'm seeing, which is that this is a favor to Russia, and like the thing that I mean, I haven't like read 100 articles about on this or anything, but the seemingly unsaid thing is that so that the Russians can annihilate the enemies of Assad, right? And that's what you're implying, and and that's.
But I also want to temper that argument because can you imagine handing Syria over just unilaterally so that Putin just has it? This is like a game of four-way hot potato, and suddenly the United States is trying to throw up their hands and not take the potato.
Okay.
So if they're putting this all on Putin and it becomes a quagmire, then that will further detract from his resources and attention and ability to respond to other foreign policy crises elsewhere in the world.
Do we have reason to believe that there is enough resistance left in the country to make it a quagmire? I mean,
if those 2,000 ISIS fighters are... Okay, so picture this. In 3 months, Syria is... Like, the Bashar al-Assad's government is saying, hey, we won. All of Syria is now under our sovereignty again. And suddenly there are those 2,000 ISIS fighters who... have free movement across the entire country instead of just their one tiny part of it.
Probably even in and out of the country, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they still have support in Iraq.
Yeah,
so this is a complicated question. It's not... I don't think any of this portends to being better for Syrians or Syria in general.
Okay.
So, on balance, this is probably a terrible move, but any use of military force is terrible. So, you're just looking for varying shades of it. Less terrible?
Well, so amongst many differences, the one you just, the quality you just pointed out about the Syria situation in which there is another power, I hesitate to say great power, but another power active in the country in that conflict, would be a difference between Syria and Yemen then, because isn't a Russia equivalent in that.
Yeah, because Bashar al-Assad's like lifeline has been its like foreign contacts with the Russian government. That's why Bashar al-Assad like goes to meet Putin in Moscow and nearly bows to him.
Yeah.
But the Yemenis, like the Houthi-led government, have like, okay, this is kind of the counter-argument that says there's no real Iranian support for them, because if there were, they'd probably be doing a lot better than they are now.
Well, yeah, that's sort of a hard thing to exactly show, because it's like, it is possible Iran just sucks at helping out one of their puppets. But yeah, but I agree with you. It's kind of like, what's the most... it's like an Occam's razor, I think, is what you're saying. It's like, okay, what's more realistic? That there's this country under all these sanctions, 500,000 miles away, that, you know, is getting through a blockade and supplying this rebellion, and they're doing really bad? Or is it just primarily a sort of grassroots, although I don't know if that's an appropriate term for Yemen, but grassroots rebellion?
Yeah, it's a local fight.
And they are outnumbered and doing badly. Like, yeah, I think the latter is more, it's just more rational.
And horribly outfinanced. I mean, I'm sure the Saudis and the Emiratis are just throwing money at their proxy forces in Yemen. Can't imagine the Houthis are able to do anything in comparison.
So, is there... okay, so first of all, to circle back a little bit, I just typed in Eric Prince Syria on Google News when that was brought up, and there were a lot of reports earlier this year about the U.S. considering putting in a plan by Eric Prince of mercenaries into Syria, so...
Is that what the Afghanistan thing was? Just like a false, like just a way of getting in the door? Just
putting
something up that was just ludicrous on its face, so that somebody would agree to something more reasonable.
So Kind of, yeah. I mean, so in these a few articles I'm flipping through here, there's a batch from like April and a batch from like August, and it seems like the focus in the kind of headlines at the time were Afghanistan, but that Syria was kind of always a potentially part of this. Of course, that was all poo-pooed at the time, right? That was fake news. Yeah. This is never going to be considered. And we'll see, I guess.
And now we have John Bolton as national security advisor, so all bets are off.
Do you think we would go long without knowing about them? Like, so let's say that is the insidious plan here. How long would it take until we knew that that was the plan? Like, would there'd be news reports out of Syria like, hey, there's a Blackwater or some equivalent outfit operating here.
We already have mercenaries on the ground there anyways. We're just increasing the number. So that
might be hard to notice then.
Exactly. The only thing that we could see is like the troops leaving. Because, you know, they always love pointing cameras at troops getting home. It's like, no, let's not make it a private emotional moment of reunification reunion with them and their families. Let's put it on camera and make sure every public official is giving a 20-minute speech in front of them to delay that and make it as painful to watch as possible.
Yeah. It's always, at the airport and the tarmac. And
these people defended freedom. Yeah, well, why aren't you thanking them?
Yeah, it's like not even looking at them, just looking at the camera. politicians, I guess. It's one of the horrific side effects. So let's spin this into kind of Trump's version of war. How does he do war? How does he do the military-industrial complex? How is it different than previous presidents?
One, he's delegating a lot of authority, like the drone war. They used to meet like on Tuesdays, I think it was, to eat pizza and swap literal baseball cards of potential targets and figure out who they were going to hit with a drone strike. And Trump apparently can't be bothered with that much process and has just obviated that entire process and given it to lower-level military commanders who are bombing people at like 12 times harder than they used to, judging from the civilian casualties that are just exploding as a result.
So that's a quality of his leadership, I made air quotes, I don't know if he talked about before election, but very shortly after inauguration, that was a widely reported kind of policy change, which I think we talked about on the show. Mm-hmm. So is there anything else, or have we seen maybe the effects of that more borne out?
Somalia,
go ahead.
Yeah, in Somalia, we're hitting the ground with even more ground airstrikes than we have in, years, really.
Okay.
And so again, we're just bombing the heck out of it. And those areas have been turned into quote areas of active hostilities, which really frees up the hands of the ground commanders to just use force unilaterally.
Have we noticed changes in Yemen or Syria?
Yemen is also hit with that, mostly because of the mission against Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, one of the two major wars that are going on in the country. And, of course, if you remember, that resulted in Donald Trump's first war crimes by the buffet. That resulted in a 9-year-old American girl being killed by Emirati gunships, hitting her village while a special operations team was trying to infiltrate below. I think they've gotten slightly less reckless. At least they're not doing it publicly.
Interesting. So, would... I've never seen reporting on this, but would those types of things that those types of decisions that are being sort of pushed down and decentralized a little bit, do we still think that that would go through the defense secretary, like joint chiefs of staff or something like that?
Maybe like the regional commanders.
Okay, that's way down then.
Yeah, because it's not really the job of the joint chiefs or the defense secretary to get in tactical or even strategic decisions. Well, I mean, strategic, sure, but certainly not tactical decisions like airstrikes and close air support.
But that was something that the White House was getting involved in.
Well, those strikes have been historically decided on by the president, which is why, you know, they had their peace meetings with figuring out who they were going to attack. And, yeah, they just held it by the buffet at Mar-a-Lago that time.
And you're saying, so pointing to Obama, when he personally in the White House would take a role in this, that the Joint Chiefs are operating similarly now as to then? Like, they're not really a part... They weren't really a part of it then.
Yeah, I mean, they have statutory responsibilities and...
Yeah.
...manned. So, I mean, they're fulfilling the same role that they always have.
Yeah.
Advise the president and ensure military policy is carried out in an orderly, efficient military manner.
It just seems that... given a changing leadership style from the top, that other personnel would change theirs. You're saying it's statutorily dictated, then. You know,
it's on the other hand, we did also mention, shall we say, a power grab by somebody in this chain of command, how Mattis is like ameliorating, changing, or just outright refusing certain policies from the White House, so we are seeing that. Like, the White House gives up control, and the Secretary of Defense is willing to take the authority.
I think it's extremely unlikely that Mattis, and you probably know more about him, so that he seems to be some sort of, like politically greedy. I mean, he's not going out and giving speeches left and right and things like that. But like, this is like a classic setup in many other instances in history of like what leads to coups and things like that.
I mean, not the least of which is, military industrial complex is not getting their way, or the interests around them not getting their way. They tend to take that shit serious.
Yeah. You can imagine a scenario in which Trump was more of a let's get out of Afghanistan, like, you know, right away by February 2017, we are out, you know, and that causing him some trouble, which may be why he didn't, I guess. I also don't think he had strong convictions about that.
No, it was just a useful political tool.
I think, as you pointed out, he played both sides of war. With his rhetoric in the campaign, he was both, very extreme, bombing families, but then also, why the hell are we in Afghanistan? Let's just stop wasting money there.
Yeah, he was just trying to borrow liberal and the talking points of everyone, so that everyone would have a reason to support him.
Yeah,
I heard that in no few cases, a lot of Trump supporters like, oh, he doesn't want us to fight any more wars overseas, and it's like, well, yes, that is a popular policy position, but this guy's not in favor of that.
Yeah, it's just bold. It's bold lying.
Yep,
it's lying so bold, like we were taught in history class, you know, the big lie. Or at least I was, and you know how it's like such a big lie that it's like hard for people to grasp it not being true because it's so committed by the liar, and that's like his political stance on every issue is that
a bold lie.
I mean, healthcare. I mean, not to get into that right now, but you know, it's similarly so.
Everything he talks about is some kind of lie.
Yeah, but it's big, and it tries to please the extremes on both ends.
Yeah, it's a lie of incompetence. Like, he just tries to... I realize this kind of when he was talking about this withdrawal. He's the kind of guy who wants to give everybody who talks to him everything that they want because he needs to feel liked.
Yeah, although I would slightly amend it, is that he's the kind of guy who wants everyone who has talked to him to think they got what they want. Mm. Because, as you said, because I don't think he's actually prepared to give people much, but he wants them to think he gave them much. I was just heard something recently where, it didn't happen recently, but one of these stories about the Trump Organization, the charity, where he... like, he literally went onto a dais and sat in someone else's seat and took the praise for having donated so much to a charity.
What?
And then there's another one where, like, someone... I'm sure these can be looked up, but where someone... someone in their will or something like that gave the... charity money, but it was supposed to I don't know why, but somehow personally gave him money. I don't know, but it was supposed to go to a charity. And so Donald Trump does give the money to this other charity, but he does it with a giant check that he personally hands that has these other people's names nowhere, and it's all like from Donald Trump, and takes all the credit.
Oof. Oh my God, what a lunatic.
Yeah. And so it's obviously very narcissistic, but yeah, it he craves that praise, but he's so just selfish. I don't. It's like it's so big. It's hard to just come up with one word. But he's so greedy and that he doesn't actually want to give anything from himself or sacrifice anything from himself, even if it's just fucking money. Like, I know rich people are greedy, but most rich people, it's, like, not a huge percentage. It's not a big cost to them. But they do give, like, a quantitatively large piles of cash out. I'm not trying to praise rich people too much with their charity giving because, again, it's, like, you know, what? How much is it really costing them, like, personally?
I mean, they make money off of that. Well, they make... there's benefits to having a foundation.
Yeah, for sure. But Trump is getting all the benefits from having a foundation. I mean, that's why it's getting dissolved and all that. It's a whole other topic, I guess, for sure. But I think all of these things that we see from the rest of his career and presidency are, like, when applied to foreign policy, are really, like, it's like a big, it's like opening up a puzzle box. It's just complex, it's overwhelming, and there is a 3-year-old that wants to, like, play with the puzzle.
And doesn't know how to talk to other people or, you know, figure out what he wants himself.
Yeah, it's like, he just wants the finished product and is unwilling to do any work for it.
Right, because he hands out this huge proclamation, like, hey, all American troops are going to be out in 30 days, like, and then logistics of that are left to who? The J3, the planning part at the Pentagon, or are we just gonna fill it in as we go?
But if this was surprising advisors, I mean, I'm sure he talked with someone about it, but we don't know who. But it must not have been.
It couldn't be Bolton, right? Bolton would never be in favor of this.
I've never heard of Bolton being in favor of pulling troops out of a country.
Yeah, in this case, he's like, oh, Iran. This is, like, right up his alley.
Unless they're going somewhere else. Unless resources are being diverted elsewhere.
Yeah, there is that, I suppose.
Because there could be, like, a kind of realpolitik. What are we getting out of this? Maybe bringing up some of the, like, putting Russia into a quagmire reason that you bought before. Like, if that's... whether or not Bolton came up with it, but if you went to Bolton and said, okay, we're going to pull out of Syria so that Russia can have sole responsibility, they'll get in a quagmire, and we're going to now divert resources to Iran, Yemen, whatever it is, North Korea, I don't know. I think he would buy that plan.
There's almost some logic to that.
Yeah, and so I don't know if it's his plan. I mean, obviously, I don't know if it's his plan. But the fact that Trump did not talk to many advisors makes me think that this was not, as you pointed out, the logistics of it were not discussed. The the implications, having multiple agency, you know, weigh in on it. Like, I think presidents normally make decisions. And he doesn't listen to people. So why would he waste time listening to people? And he just is going to make a decision based off of a hunch?
Maybe Sean Hannity called him.
Yeah, or it could be, I was going to just say, like, or it could be a purely political decision, though I think we're having trouble. Political decisions should have generally a clear benefit, because if you're not able to discern the benefit for the person who made a purely political decision, then it's like, I mean, maybe it's like 16-dimensional chess here, but it's like, if we can't see how he's benefiting, then, like, what is the constituency that is in favor of this? Like, is this something his base has been calling for, you know?
I mean, certainly the left has been calling for it, or, I guess, certain aspects of the left.
So is he making some sort of play at the left? That seems weird, well, right?
But in combined with, like, the criminal justice reform this week.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
The other thing that he did. Yeah, he's almost making a play for, like, people that wouldn't typically support him.
And that's why he's, like, trying to be really nice to Nancy Pelosi?
Mm-hmm. Because he knows he's probably going to get investigated pretty hard once January comes around. It's going to be a very different climate in Washington.
Do you think he's trying to move to the left of Mike Pence?
Is that... How hard would that be?
No, yeah.
I mean, are we just talking like a literal physical step? Or?
Well, I mean, way to the left. So much so that people maybe get trigger shy at impeachment.
I mean, it's like getting out of wars is to the left of like even the baseline Democratic position anymore. So,
well, but the Democrats would be the people impeaching. I mean, leading notionally. Mm-hmm. The majority of the votes to impeach him. So,
sure, but I'm going to say this now. If they get to impeaching him, his use of the military and his foreign policy is not what's going to get him in trouble.
No. Yeah. You're saying not just this, but everything that's come before this and will come after it. I agree. That's not why he would be impeached, but it could be a reason someone might not want to cast a vote to impeach. If they're like, hey, I hate the guy, but he did this, this, and the other, including domestic criminal justice. He's like starts governing like a fucking progressive, I could see a bunch of Democrats, and I don't mean even the hardcore, like, but just, you know, like a center leftist or something like that.
I'd like to amend my previous statement. I was just imagining if he does actually withdraw from Syria and Afghanistan and like all these other places and like cut off the Saudis, then I could see that actually as being a reason for him to get impeached. There will be people out for his blood.
Yeah, okay. I gotcha. Yeah. Although he's not doing all of that right now.
No, not yet. But
well, but I mean, maybe all you have to do is like...
Just to scare him.
Like, if he just has one thing, he's like, I got us out of Syria. And he starts his propaganda campaign on that, criminal justice, a couple other sort of... somewhere left of center, where we can debate on. I don't know. I'm picturing a scenario where Democrats are like, I don't think I want to impeach this guy. Maybe we'll try our hand at beating him in the election. But
maybe he is reasonable and we can actually work in governing together.
Yeah.
Maybe he's trying to, can he peel off enough of Congress to support him that it matters? That's, I guess, the question for January.
The fact that we're questioning this kind of pisses me off. He like had a fine resume, and he's switching shit up.
Right.
I mean, by fine resume, I mean consistent. It was clear. We knew what he was, who he was. I don't think the criminal justice thing, by the way, I really do not give him much credit for that.
No, that was like, what, 90 some senators voted on that?
Yeah, I think it was like 87. Yeah, which was like Isn't that shocking to you, by the way, that McConnell, not that we know for sure it would have been the same number if it would have happened 2 years ago or whenever it was under 4 years ago under Obama that this was being brought up, and McConnell held it back. But, I mean, if it's that overwhelming, McConnell is just, like, holding back very single-handedly in a clear way, we can now see, the will of not just the people, but, like, elected representatives.
Yeah, like, he's moving, I mean, I'm not saying progress is a progressive, but, like, just general progress in a very real and literal way. Like, just allowing things to move through Congress.
Yeah, that's... Oof.
Yeah, it's insanity.
It really is, because, like, people talk about Congress not doing anything, but... I think that's one thing I've learned personally in the past. It's been more than 2 years. It's not a Trump thing, really. But in the past few years, is all of the power the Speaker of the... In terms of things coming to the floor, Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader have. It's too much. I mean, talk about presidential and governor power being too much.
Yeah, it seems like unelected power. Like, it's just power by process that they've just kind of taken it up upon themselves. And I understand Congress has to have orderly processes, but
yeah.
Does it have to have one person sitting on the aorta for the entire Congress?
No, that's not even a... it's certainly not by law, but is it even by Senate rules, or is that more of a custom where, because they lead the caucus agrees to... essentially defers to that person.
I think it's actually in the rules. Because
okay.
The Senate leader and the speaker basically choose what gets voted on the floor.
That's so if what they kind don't of insane it, then, level of power is that?
Yeah, it's insane.
It doesn't even on the surface really make sense. Like, I guess, what's even the logic behind it? Can you even think of like a
political
rationalization?
Control. I mean, we're not really a democracy, and so a Republican form of government is just kind of run in certain, you know, customary ways, which is kind of authoritarian.
I mean, if I was the rest of the country, well, actually, technically I am, and if I wasn't in the first district of Wisconsin, or in a month in whatever district of California Nancy Pelosi represents, that's kind of... The only voters whose will is being even kind of directly represented when it comes to that are those, that one district. And in the Senate, it's what, Kentucky?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bernie seems to want us to wrap this up. So is there anything else you want to talk about with foreign policy and the way Trump makes war?
Well, I will say he's copying the Bush playbook on Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And with John Bolton at the helm, I guess that's to be expected. But we'll see how much, I don't know, the next few weeks are going to be pretty instructive on what is actually going on inside the Trump White House and National Security Council.
All right. Well, make sure to find us on www.tellmewhattothink.com and stoneduckmedia.com, and find us on the Apple or the Google podcasts. Do all the nice things that nice people do for nice podcasters. And everyone have a great week. Thank you for listening.
Some days it's sunny, some days it rains. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!